If we can, please, let's go to the beginning. See, this thing is really falling apart here, but I don't want to part with it. It's just, this is like, this is my thing here, my book, and now page 58. How it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. So we're told in OA many, many times that the key ingredient here is willingness, and to some degree that is true. But what we're also told here is one of the key ingredients, or the key ingredient, is honesty. And honesty must permeate my entire recovery. Because if I'm lying to myself and I am continuing to lie to myself and others, I'm just not going to be able to get in touch with anything that I'm going to need to get in touch with to have, thank you so much, Janice, a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. It's just not, thank you so much, it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. our stories disclose, excuse me, in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. This next thing is sort of like ground zero, step zero, very, very important. If you decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. And this was explained to me. One of the things that I do with sponsees is turn some of these statements into questions and some of the questions into statements. If you've decided you want what we have, and it was asked of me, do you want what we have? And then he asked me, I remember Tom asking me, what is it that we have? And I said, well, they're not eating. And he said, no, that's part of it. And he said that they're happy, that's part of it. And I couldn't quite get the answer on my own, so he kind of helped me. And what he told me at Swedish Covenant Hospital many years ago is that they're not compulsively overeating and that they're not fighting food, that they're able to refrain from compulsive overeating and to do so happily. And what you see in people that are in recovery are people that are not fighting food. They're not fighting the world. They're not scared to death. They're not angry as hell. They're not trying to power drive their will into the lives of other people. They're not trying to take on other people's lives and try to direct them and control them. And we're going to be talking about that quite a bit. Okay. At some of these we bought. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. If you're willing to go to any length to get it, this is going to require some work. I have to be willing to do this. This is not a program for people who want this. This is not a program for people who need this. This is a program for people who do this. This is an action program. There's no chapter called Into Thinking. There's no chapter called Into Wishing and Hoping and Praying. There is a chapter Into Action. And the group that I belong to at the North Scottsdale Fellowship Club is a group of five meetings. And the five meetings have banded together to form a group. And the group is called Into Action Group. I'm going to just sit down and do this for just a little bit because my knee hurts. Okay. Can everybody see me okay from here and all that? Okay, good, because my knee is not the one that we got at the store, but the other one that came with the package is kind of saying, Chubby, sit down. Okay, then you are ready to take certain steps. And in order to be ready to take certain steps, one of the things I'm going to have to do is understand that there is going to be work involved here. At some of these we booked, we thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. What does it require of me to be fearless and thorough? It's going to require honesty and faith. And by this time in the book, it is assumed that we have read and absorbed chapter 4. The first four chapters, plus the doctor's opinion, are designed so that we can conceive of the first two steps. The first three steps in OA are not working steps. They are conclusions of the mind. And we talked about this in the end of our session this morning about the second step. And it is extremely important that I understand the first two steps here before we move on. Number one, that I'm powerless over food. What does that mean? I'm powerless. I cannot control the amount I eat because of the allergy, and I cannot keep from eating because of the strange mental twist. When my mental twist is activated because of selfishness, self-seeking, fear, anger, and dishonesty, it is going to call out in my brain irresistibly for food. As my brain hears the call of the food, it will try to resist this with unaided willpower. My willpower will shoot up and it will say, no, we're not eating Raisinets this time. Now, in order for me to understand the powerless nature of what this is, I have to understand that the allergy is permanent. The strange mental twist, we're going to be able to affect a spiritual awakening so that we can get between the mental twist and the eating of the food, and therefore we will not set the terrible cycle in motion. And the second step is extremely important. It is just extremely important that we understand the first two steps. Powerless over food, life is unmanageable because of the allergy and the mental twist. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. In order to be restored to sanity, I have to have been insane. And the way that I behaved around food and the way that I behaved around life was absolutely bereft of any sanity. Came to believe, not suddenly woke up and was hit by a car of belief, but I came to believe through understanding that God could and would save me from myself because he loved me. And I had to also try every wrong answer before I would arrive at the right answer, which is to hold God's hand through it all, and he lovingly and munificently, benevolently will carry me through whatever trials and tribulations life may present. And so I have to understand that the main object of the book is to help me find a power greater than myself which will solve my problem. Now, it doesn't say problems, it says problem. Is my problem more month left at the end of my money? No. Is my problem lack of dating? No. Is my problem a divorce? No. Is my problem whatever? No. My problem is ego. My problem is dishonesty, selfishness, self-seeking, fear, and anger. When fear, anger, selfishness, self-seeking, and dishonesty are held in check by the working of the steps, they're negated by the working of the steps, and they are neutralized, they will not trigger the strange mental twist. I will not eat the food. I will not pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a with a firm resolution not to eat that way again. And I won't repeat that cycle over and over and over again. The mind telling me it's okay and the body ensuring that it's not. And that's what this is about. So let's continue here. At some of these we bought. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go, absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now.
Half measures availed us nothing. Now, recovery is just like a vending machine. I bet you didn't expect me to say that this morning, did you? All right, recovery is like a vending machine. If I go to a vending machine and a can of pop or whatever it is you want to buy out of there is a dollar, and I put in 99 cents, guess what comes out? Nothing. I'm either putting it all in or I'm taking out nothing. That's what this is about. This means I'm all in or I'm all out. There is no such thing as half a recovery. I'm either doing this or I'm not. If I'm doing 99% of it, I am in the throes of the illness. If I'm doing 99% of it, I'm in the illness. If I'm making a conscious effort to hold on to a resentment or an amends, that's not recovery. That's not trusting God. God is either everything or He is nothing. What is my choice to be? Okay. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked His protection and care with complete abandon. Rather than read these steps, let's go to page, if we can, 263, unless you have a third edition and then it's right around there.
Would it be safe to say if you were hanging on to the 99%, you were just dieting?
You were dieting with group support is a very good way of putting it. You're just dieting with group support, absolutely.
Is it from farm to city?
No, he's sold himself short. It's 263.
I'm in a third edition.
Okay, third edition I don't know, but he sold himself short. It's the story of Earl T. who brought it to Chicago. Okay, this is where they got the steps that we work today. Number one, these are the six steps of the Oxford Group movement. Complete deflation. Dependence and guidance from a higher power. Moral inventory. Confession. Restitution. Continued work with other alcoholics. This is where they got it. Now, Bill did not set out to write 12 steps. What he set out to do was to close up some of the loopholes that these alcoholics were jumping through to go back into the booze. And there were loopholes in the six steps that he wanted to close up. He never set out to write 12. But he did say, and Bill was rather nocturnal, he was working on this at night, and he was working on it with one of those yellow legal pads and a pencil. And he said that he knew that in writing chapter 5, he was going to have to put down just how this works. That the time for philosophizing was over, and he was going to have to put down what it was to do to recover. And he said that his hand started flying across the page. And within about 20 minutes, 30 minutes, he wrote chapter 5, one of the greatest pieces of spiritual literature that the world has ever seen, with specific instructions for the steps, at least 3 and 4. But the bottom line is that there was a lot of fighting going on. There was a lot of arguing going on. And if you ever look at, and there are many of them out there, you can get the original manuscript copy, and you can see what he wrote originally. And they made him change you and must to we and did. They didn't want the book to be quite as you must do this, you must do that, because they knew that no good alcoholic wanted a finger in their face. And if you look at this, this is all written in the past tense. The only chapter that is written in the imperative rather than the declarative is chapter 7. Chapter 7, in working with others, it is back to you and must and directions, what to do, what to say, what not to say, what not to do when working with a new person. And so Bill had to pull back, but he was cunning and baffling and powerful too. And when the fight was on, he threw it back at them and said, okay, you guys finish the book then. And they said, no, 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 you're going to be the primary author of the book. But he was done fighting with them. He says, I can't fight you guys anymore. And so if you look at some of the language in chapter 6, chapter 7, he puts you and must and do this and do that kind of stuff right back there. But chapter 7 is written in the imperative, and all the other chapters are written in the declarative, and there's past tense. Okay, let's not read the steps. You can all read those on your own. We all heard them a million times. Is anybody, by the way, at this retreat? I forgot to ask this yesterday. Is this anybody's first meeting or first entrance into OA at all? Because sometimes that will happen. No, I'm not seeing anybody. Okay, all right, that's okay. I'm on page 60. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. And you've all heard the ABCs at meetings many times. We're going to pull them apart a little bit more than what you're accustomed to, and we're going to sort of dive in there and see how important these ABCs are as they manifest almost like a prerequisite to going on with the steps. And this is very, very important information, but if you listen in the meetings, sometimes they gloss through it so quickly, you would think that there's no intense meaning here when there is. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. An alcoholic is a person with the strange mental twist and the physical allergy. The physical allergy and the mental twist is what sets me apart. Is everybody that is overweight a compulsive overeater? No. Is everybody that has purged a bulimic? No. A compulsive overeater is someone who has the mental twist and the physical allergy. B, and could not manage our own lives, sorry. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. If there is something in you that says, if this person would stop doing that, or that person would stop doing this, or that person would zig instead of zagging, I wouldn't eat so much, you're not ready. You are a compulsive overeater, and it has absolutely zero to do with what others are doing or not doing. Your hopeless condition of mind and body are not dependent on, nor are they derived from, any earthly action. You're not here because of your parents. You're not here because of something that did or didn't happen. If you had that experience and food didn't give you the effect, you wouldn't be sitting here now. I can go back and say, well, my mother used food for love. She did. But had she used liquor for love, I wouldn't be an alcoholic because I don't like the taste of liquor. If she would have used gambling on horse racing as love, I wouldn't be a gambler because I don't care which horse wins the race. I just want one of them to win and don't hurt the other ones. If I could, I would just bet on the brown one or something. Exactly. Or let me pet them when they're done or something. Or let me give them a carrot or an apple. But please, I really don't care which one wins. As a matter of fact, give me the slowest one. I'll pet that one because they probably feel bad. I don't really, I'm not a gambler, as you can tell. That no human power could have relieved our alcoholism also means that if you were rich, or you were poor, or you were famous, that you wouldn't be this way. Just ask John Candy. Just ask Mama Cass. Just ask Chris Farley. Just ask John Belushi. Just ask Karen Carpenter. Just ask all these various people who, if you don't know who Mama Cass was, look her up on Google. She was one of us. She was a member of the Mamas and the Papas a little bit before your time. I can tell some of you are going, who's that? Mama Cass had a voice that when she sang, you could definitely feel your heart fluttering around. She had a beautiful voice. She was in the Mamas and the Papas, and she was 400 pounds, and she was at the London Palladium, and she died eating a sandwich. Some of the talk show hosts, some of the movie stars, some of the actresses that you see and actors on TV, some of the athletes, they're addicted, and their money and their fame and their power from within that little universe will not save them. Being poor won't save you. It's not a product of human control that God could and would if he were sought. That God could and would if he were sought is one of the most overlooked things. I have to believe that God not only can, he will. He will do it. He loves me. He loves you. Walk to him. He'll run to you. Now, one of the reasons that I cannot recover out of other literature sources, one of the reasons that I will not recover from them is it will not answer the question that we're going to be answering in a minute here, and that is, just what do I do to seek God, and what do I have to do? And it is only the big book of AA that answers these questions and gives me these very specific, clear-cut directions. Not suggestions, but directions. So, being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him, just what do we mean by that and what do we do? Let's stop right there for just a second. Our life and our will and our life. What is my will? What is my life? My will is my thinking. My life is my action. What I'm turning over to God is my thinking and my action. My thinking and my action. The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. It doesn't say any alcoholic's life that's run on self-will. It says any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. So if I'm going to be out here living on self-will, my life is doomed to failure. My life is doomed at that point. Help. Oh, on that basis, sorry. We are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Many of us had altruistic motives as we tried to force feed our will into the lives of people, our children, our parents, our friends, whoever. But I mean, well, I'm only trying to help. Just do what I want you to do. I don't really care how you feel about that. Just get married in the damn clown suit. I think it'll be funny. Just do it. And get some moose poop and put earrings on from the moose poop. Okay. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. I'm absolutely certain that if you just did everything I want you to do, not only would I be happier, but you would be happier too. Everything will be just fantastic. Just do what I want you to do. Do it my way. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest, but as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits. That paragraph there, the bottom of 60, the top of 61, is what we are going to use as our definition of selfish when we do the fourth step inventory. When we write selfish, what we really mean is the script. The script. The problem isn't that you're not sticking to my script as much as that I have one. If I didn't have a script, my life would be better off. So if I have a script for what you should be thinking, doing, wearing, not doing, if I know exactly when you should zig and exactly when you should zag, that's a problem for me, not you, me. It's a problem for me because the script is causing great disturbances from within myself. When you don't stick to it, I feel thrown off. The next thing is we're going to now define self-seeking. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. Really? He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. You're screwing me over. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes on the next occasion still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. That's the understatement of the year. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? We're going to define self-seeking. I want the results that I want. I want you to do what I want you to do, and I want it to make me feel a certain way. I want it to yield up a certain amount of happiness in my life. Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? And how many of us have beat ourselves into oblivion because we zigged when we should have zagged, because we did this instead of that, that we went east instead of west, and we beat ourselves, and we beat ourselves, and we take that out on the people around us, and we're sure that if they would have gotten it, and if they would have said this instead of saying that, that everything would have been okay. What does it tell me here? I'm a victim of the delusion. It doesn't say I have a delusion. It says I'm the victim of a delusion, the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well. So I'm going to put my cap on every day of manager, and I'm going to run the whole world. No, I have to quit playing God. Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? They see right through us. We think they don't. We're full of it. We're full of moose poop. We see, they see right through us. Don't you see through them when they try to power drive you? Don't you feel manipulated when they try to manipulate you? They're no different than you. They may not say it to your face, but they're saying it to themselves. Yeah, yeah, right, dropped it. Okay, anyway. Okay. Is it not evident to the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and do not his action make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? And how many of us were really able to solve the problems of ourselves or others operating on self-will? We think we know all the answers, but we find out we don't. And just because we think it doesn't mean it's true. Remember, there's three sides to every story. Your side, my side, and then there's what really happened, as we're going to get into in the resentment. Our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. I feel bad that I'm not standing up, but at least my knee is just not killing me. Okay. He's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation. The minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations, are not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, our self-pity? So now we're going to review some of the character defects. Yelling at your wife or yelling at your husband is not a character defect. These are the products of character defects. Being late for work is not a character defect. It is the product of character defects. The character defects, selfish, self-seeking, fear, anger, and dishonesty. Okay, here we're going to go over selfishness, self-centeredness. That we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. And as they do, they create pain and suffering for us. Okay. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourself, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must or it kills us. God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our own self-centeredness in us by much by wishing or trying on our own willpower. We had to have God's help. A broken brain cannot fix a broken brain. You cannot will yourself into being an honest, fearless person. You need to work the steps. A broken brain cannot fix a broken brain. Okay? That is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. The height of audacity for me is to think I know what's best for another human being. And the height of audacity for me is to think I know what's best for me. You know what's best for me beyond this? I don't know. The thing that's best for me is to work the steps. When we get to page 77, it's going to say, my real purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. In order for me to be of maximum service to anybody, I have to be out of the food. Once I'm in the food, I am of no service to anyone. I am now not a fountain, I am a drain. I am now a drain. I'm going to suck the life out of this world, suck it down, because I don't know what else to do. In order for me to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, I have to be working the steps. In order for me to be of maximum service to God and the people about me, I have to be clear-headed. And when I'm in the food, I don't really care about you, so why am I listening to you? Of what reason do I have? Does this make sense? That if I'm in the food, I can't be of maximum service to anyone. I'm just like the moose poop. Make some earrings out of me or something, and that's about as much as I can do. That is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that the hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch to which we passed to freedom. Now, here's your third step promises, obviously. When we sincerely took such a position, the one just mentioned, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, we became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. I am not the person that ate the food in the 70s. I'm here, and I'm honest with you. Doesn't mean I'm brutal. Honesty without love is brutality. Love without honesty is sentimentality. Being honest doesn't mean I come up to people and say, gee, you're ugly. Or, you know, that's not honest. That's idiotic. That's cruel. But being honest means when you ask me a question about this, I'm going to tell you my truth. You do with it as you will, but I'm going to love you anyway. I'm going to love you anyway. And I'm going to understand that you're following a path I may not understand, but I can embrace and accept it because it's yours. And that's very important. Now, step three that we're about to do is one of two of the most misunderstood steps there is.
The first most misunderstood step is 4. The second most misunderstood step is 3. And the next most misunderstood step is 2. Step 3 is a very misunderstood step. If there's 3 frogs sitting on a log, and one of the frogs decides to jump off the log, how many frogs are on the log?
3.
3. Correct. Very good. That moose poop really helps. Why? Because a decision to jump off the log without the action of jumping off the log produces nothing. It produces nothing. A decision not followed up by action means nothing. I decided that I was going to come to Anchorage, Alaska. Where is Paula? Where are you? Okay. Paula contacted me a long time ago and asked me if I would come. And I said, oh, brother. Oh, my God. I got to go to Seattle, and then I got to go here, and I got to go there. And I gotta... Oh, wait, I found a nonstop. I'll come. Right? Remember? Okay. So we decided that I would come. Did that mean I was here? No. I paid for that plane ticket months ago, and you guys, yeah, that was like quite a while ago that I did that. Didn't get me here. I was sitting in Scottsdale, Arizona when I bought the ticket. I was sitting in Scottsdale, Arizona when I printed out my boarding pass. I was sitting in Scottsdale, Arizona when I emailed you back and forth all those times. And I was sitting in Scottsdale, Arizona until Thursday night when my friend Leslie came and got me and said, okay, and we loaded my suitcase in the back of her car and I went to the airport and I got on the plane and then I was in Anchorage, Alaska when the plane touched down here. So a decision to come here has to be followed up with action. Action and more action. So if you want to, you can now go into your meetings when people say, I did the 1, 2, 3, the 1, 2, 3, the 1, 2, 3. If you've really done a third step, you're walking around with a notebook and a pencil in your hand doing 4 through 12. Because the third step is a decision and a beginning, but it's a decision to go on with the steps. And it says at once followed. Okay, let's take the third step together. I see some quizzical faces there. Okay, the third step is of zero use to me unless I am now doing 4, 5, and the rest of them. Okay. We were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker as we understood Him, God, come on guys, God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Abandon myself utterly. No holding back. No vestiges of self-will. No vestiges of what I'm going to control. God, bring me a girl. God, get me some money. God, make it so that I don't have to be so fat and I'll handle the rest. Nope. Nope, I'm all in or I'm all out. God, show me what kind of water to drink. God, show me what kind of Kleenex to buy. God, show me what kind of shoes to buy. God, show me what kind of socks you want me to wear today. The snazzy ones, okay. God, take it all. You know better than I do what I should do and where I should go. We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with an understanding person.